Joe Marshall, CBI Associate Editor, and welcome to this CBI podcast on Achieving Net Zero. Today I'm joined by CBI's Tom Thackeray, Programme Director for Decarbonisation, and Tania Kumar, Head of Decarbonisation. Tom, Tania, hello, thanks for joining.
Hi Joe.
Hi Joe, great to be here.
Now I think it's fair to say that there's never not a big week when it comes to net zero. But as we talk, it's London Climate Action Week, and we've just seen the release of the Climate Change Committee's annual assessment report. We'll discuss the report a little later, but before we get into that, let's take it back a few weeks. The Science Museum, the CBI's Achieving Net Zero conference. This is the voice of Mary Robinson of Trinity College Dublin and former President of Ireland.
And then we have the preparations for COP27. And quite honestly, I am going to be, and the elders are going to be very outspoken over the next coming months, because nobody is stepping up enough. Nobody. And even, you know, industry that was more committed has slipped a little bit. The United Kingdom has the presidency. I'm a friend of Alex Sharma. I agree with you. He did a great job in Glasgow. But the United Kingdom is slipping too. Everybody's slipping at the moment.
Tom, Tania, this was our first all-in-person event since the pandemic began. 1,200 businesses signed up. It's a very different world to the one we were in when we last held an in-person event. The economic climate is a challenging one. Has business lost its enthusiasm for net zero in light of this? What are we hearing from members?
Thanks, Joe. I think it's safe to say that a lot has happened in the last 12 months. It's hard to believe that only last year we had the UK's release of its own net zero strategy just ahead of COP26. And then following a few months later, and actually already at the time, we were going through these discussions around high energy prices here in the UK and across Europe. And then sadly, we had the impact of the war in Ukraine, and that's put energy security front of mind for everyone. But I think what we've seen from our members and the British business community is that actually this is the time to really double down on investments in net zero, seeing it as actually the solution to high energy prices, the cost of living as well. So that's been a real turn actually on the focus of net zero in itself and decarbonisation policy. It has been difficult at the same time, and I'm sure we'll touch on it. The energy prices increasing have also impacted on businesses' investment decisions that they had penciled actually to invest in some of these new technologies. So that's made it difficult in some board level discussions as well to continue with some of those plans. But most importantly, as we often discuss within the CBI, it's just the government policy that's needed, the certainty, that confidence to continue to invest at this difficult time. So I think all in all, absolutely, the determination is still there to keep investing in net zero. There's still huge business will as well to make good on the promises that we made at the International Climate Change Summit last year in Glasgow. But we still have a long way to go, and it has to be both sort of industry and government working together. But Tom, I don't know whether you feel the same.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you there, Tania. I think you sort of set up these conferences and a huge amount of work goes into them, and you wonder if anyone's going to turn up. It's like, you know, hosting a party when you're a teenager and just worrying about whether people are going to come to it or not. And actually, you rightly sort of note, Joe, there's a huge amount going on for business at the moment, and trading conditions are really challenging. But the fact that we had so many sign-ups and just the energy in the room and hearing from people like Mary Robinson, I got no sense at all from the people who turned up to that conference that they were sort of going soft on net zero whatsoever. But the trading conditions are incredibly challenging. And I think, you know, looking at just beyond the energy crisis, you've got, you know, labour shortages, general inflation, supply chain disruption. The investment ask on business is challenging at the moment, and I think that's why there needs to be more collaboration than ever with the government and a real focus on the measures that are going to drive that business investment come the autumn. And then in terms of, you know, what businesses can do and are doing, I think it kind of depends how much of those sort of economic shocks impact you as a business. So if you're in heavy industry, for example, you've seen your energy costs go up 500%, you know, that's going to have a cash flow impact. So some of your decarbonisation investment decisions might have been pushed out to the right a little bit. But long term, even in those sectors, I see no sense of the softening of the appetite or the energy towards that long-term mission. It's just, you know, there are some headwinds in the economy that the CBI has been talking about for a little while now.
Yeah, sure thing. So businesses across all sectors are setting targets, they're making commitments. But what's the evidence in terms of those commitments and how are they being moved forward?
I think there's been brilliant momentum in the corporate world towards these net zero targets for a little while, and it particularly intensified when we were heading towards COP26 last year. You know, the UK government put its shoulder behind the wheel of the Race to Zero campaign, which is a UN-led campaign enabling businesses or encouraging businesses to set comprehensive and robust net zero targets backed by science. And the UK has done a sterling job. UK businesses have done a sterling job of actually making those commitments. So if you look at our large listed businesses, we have the highest proportion in Europe of large listed businesses that have a net zero target. So that's something we can be really proud of. We have many smaller businesses also making that commitment as well. And we're also seeing sectors acting en masse. So, you know, there's great initiatives in the construction sector through Construct Zero, the water sector, the housing sector coming together with their trade body to work out how they're going to solve these problems together. So from a UK perspective, I think we've got a bit of an advantage there, and we can see that the corporate world is responding in a way which is putting us ahead of our peers at the moment.
So as net zero moves from target setting to implementation, there's opportunities and challenges there. You know, can you shed a bit of light on what they might be?
Yeah, I think across the board, you know, I think everyone loves sort of strategy. Delivery is a lot harder, and we're seeing that in government, and we're seeing it in businesses as well, actually. So there's various bodies who are sort of scrutinizing businesses' net zero targets at the moment. And there was a report just shortly after our conference, actually, which commended businesses on establishing their targets. But actually, if you look beneath the surface of that, very few of them are sort of backed up by interim targets. So you might have a 2050 net zero target, but you have a milestone on the way to that 2050 target. Very few businesses are doing what they should be doing yet in terms of the reporting standards of, you know, how they're getting towards those targets as well. Actually, quite tricky challenges that companies are thinking about at the moment. Some of them are administrative, so the fact that, you know, if you have a robust and scientific net zero target, it doesn't just encompass your own emissions, it also encompasses those of your supply chains. And if you're a supermarket, for example, and your supply chain encompasses multiple countries around the world, each with a different standards for environmental reporting and climate standards, and you've got to engage with each of your suppliers to give you the data about what their emissions profile is, that takes time, that involves systems, it's an incredibly complicated task. There's a whole administrative process. There's a strategic and sort of business change challenge as well. There's, you know, net zero is not really something that can just be done by a sustainability department. It involves, for most businesses, I'd say, a complete change in strategy. So your procurement team, your procurement strategy needs to change, your HR policies need to change, your finance. So all of those business units need to align around your decarbonisation and net zero strategy.
Just building upon what, you know, Tom was mentioning, that it's basically going to be industry and business that drives that change as well. And you're right to pick out, there are lots of challenges, particularly at an international and national level. Our businesses, you know, we need the frameworks, as I mentioned before, and that requires policy to change quite a bit as well. You can't have policy being made in the way that it has been doing to date, because it's basically missed out the impacts of climate change. That's why we're in the position we are in today. And this is, you know, the businesses sort of stepping up to say, you know, we want to engage. And that's something that we were really surprised about, actually. This has been sort of one of the several years that we've run this conference now. But we hadn't attended a COP summit before on behalf of the British business community. And just that level of engagement to say, you know, these are the opportunities, the new green markets that are going to become the new norm. and how do we actually capture those, but also show the rest of the world the opportunities that come with it, right? So that's actually, you know, really exciting to have sort of British businesses being at the forefront of that. But the other aspect on the challenge is also the demand side, which we haven't been speaking about that much. So it's great for all of these businesses and sort of national governments to be rolling out these policies and these products. But it requires the likes of, you know, all of us to actually take some of these up as well. Otherwise, you won't actually get that systemic change.
We measure everything from 1990. And if you look at it on that basis, we're about halfway down the journey that we need to be on to get to the goal of 100% reduction in emissions. But that first half, as you say, is probably the easy bit. So it's the stuff that crucially hasn't involved lots of interference. Now, there is an outlook, and I think this government has this outlook, that we can go still further on this journey without lots of that kind of interference. And I'm open to that. But the reality is, once you've decarbonised your power sector, and this government has set a goal to do that by 2035, that was our advice, and that's fantastic. That's a really important offer to the people in this country, the businesses operating in this country. We're saying by 2035, whatever electrical device you use will be zero carbon. Once you've done that, you are into the reality of the real economy, the changes that need to take place there. So we're talking about turning over the fleet of vehicles on this road, all the effort that needs to happen in buildings up and down the country, premises for business, places where people live, the reality of the changes that need to happen in land use and agriculture, the change in plant and machinery that needs to happen. That is a big effort, which we haven't really scratched the surface of yet. So I would say that that is the harder bit. And when you look at it on that basis, it's this decade that will matter. This is the decade where we'll put the policies in place that will guide that investment. Over the 2030s, we'll start to see the emissions reduction.
That was the voice of Chris Stark, Chief Executive of the Climate Change Committee. Now, the CCC's latest annual assessment report has just come out, as we mentioned earlier. What are some of the key findings and what do they mean for business, Tom?
I always look forward to the Climate Change Committee's reports. It's a bit nerdy. Yeah, it's 600 pages, this progress report, so it's thorough. And that might sound daunting, but read the executive summary if you get the chance. It's so accessible and I think so interesting as well. They've left no stone unturned, I'd say, in terms of, you know, assessing the UK's progress towards our net zero targets. And it's a bit of a mixed picture, as ever. We can justifiably say that we are world leading when it comes to establishing the targets for net zero. We're among the first to legislate for our net zero target. We backed that up at the UN at COP last year with a really ambitious, what they call an NDC, a nationally determined contribution. So we've set the right ambition. Last year, just before COP, we backed that up as well with a high-level net zero strategy. But when it comes to the policies that are going to get us there and actually achieve the pathway that we've set out, I think we're doing well in some areas, okay in others, and then not very well at all in a third category. So the CCC, I think, identifies that for around 40% of the emissions that we need to take action on, there's a plan in place, and we're moving towards that plan very nicely. So, and that includes areas like decarbonising our power supply, so the shift towards renewables and nuclear, and growing the market of electric vehicles and switching away from internal combustion engine vehicles, which is obviously the majority of road transport that we have. So that's going okay. Then there's a sort of category of things in the middle where you know, we have some policies in place, but there's still uncertainties around whether we can deliver what we said we need to deliver, and that would include things like the plan for switching our boilers in our home so that they are no longer fossil fuel and polluting. And then there's a category of things at the end where, you know, a few things where we're really not making very much progress at all, and the CCC was really quite critical, and they really picked out this point on energy efficiency as, you know, a real weakness where we do not yet have a long-term policy to incentivize people to insulate their homes. And obviously that's a danger for the long-term plan, but it's also really damaging in the context of the high energy prices that we see at the moment. The other interesting thing that I picked out from the report actually was that They did some number crunching last year in their report, and they assessed that the overall cost of our net zero policies for 2050 would have an economic cost to the economy of about 1% of GDP, based on the figures that they ran at that time. You know, the economic costs of failing to act, by the way, were significantly higher than that. But there's, you know, the upfront costs of making that transition about 1% of GDP spread over a long time. But now, given that energy prices are where they've gotten to, it just makes that, it changes that economic driver. So actually, suddenly, with renewables being far cheaper than fossil fuels, you are making an economic return by acting more quickly. So actually, there'll be a 0.5% of GDP saving by making that net zero transition. So it's not just a moral imperative, there's an economic imperative now, which is underlined in the CCC's work.
So again, it's back to that whole point of moving quick and taking advantage and really kind of seeing the opportunity of getting ahead of the game there, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And I think something that hasn't been accounted for or celebrated a little bit more, because obviously we do have a long way to go, and you know, the first sort of milestone is this 2030 point, huge focus, and it's not that far away in terms of, you know, business investment and also product development cycles. But I've worked on transport decarbonisation for the last, 5 years, and I was working on it at the beginning of when we were trying to sort of accelerate the uptake for electric vehicles. And it's actually pretty phenomenal to see how far it's come in the last few years. And that's been a combination of some great policy making, also impacts of a pandemic as well. But seeing how that's changed behaviour to actually increase the uptake of electric vehicles. So the question is, how can you replicate some of that, you know, those green shoots that we do have? It's shown us the art of the possible, right? That we can do it here in the UK. And actually, a lot of other global countries are going to struggle with this transition as well. So how can we actually build upon, you know, that great bit of behavioural change that we've seen, and to get, you know, the public and consumers on side? We need to be talking about this being a transition for everybody, not just those that can afford to buy that expensive electric vehicle or can afford to buy something that's sustainable, you know, not eat meat and buy alternatives, for instance. So there's a long way to go there, but I think as the UK public, we should be proud that we have been making changes as well.
So looking ahead to the rest of the year, what else can we expect to happen on net zero policy?
Gosh, Joe, that is quite a large question. We've got, well, it's safe to say that net zero policy or decarbonisation policy or energy and climate change policy, there's lots of different terminology for it at the moment. But it's safe to say that, you know, the cost of energy is going to keep this conversation around decarbonising our economy pretty much front of mind for the rest of this year. From a policy perspective, we've got some significant set pieces actually that are really important for us. So in particular, there will be the energy bill that we are expecting, and that's very significant from actually delivering on our energy security. So just for people that are listening in, you know, a few months ago, in response to the war in Ukraine, the UK had to work, you know, pretty quickly alongside sort of others across the continent to develop a little bit of a strategy around how do we actually secure energy for the UK in the coming months. So part of that has actually required new policy. There's a lot of ideas about how do you accelerate the transition to renewables. So the energy bill is going to be a big set piece of legislation which will enable some of those changes to come more quickly online. So that's something that's going to be all encompassing across the economy. So that's one big piece. And then secondly, towards the end of the year, there's also going to be a big consultation out around sort of carbon pricing policies. In particular. So that's actually going to be a pretty significant moment for us as a country, because that also impacts directly on energy prices as well. So a few big things coming down the track. And also actually just looking ahead to COP27, right? That's a significant moment at the, for everyone globally, because countries across the globe, the idea is to strengthen those nationally determined contributions that Tom mentioned before. So in the context of what's been happening currently, one aspect is obviously there's been a huge acceleration in the energy transition, which is really positive. But also there are some big ambitious goals that we need to meet globally for COP27, in particular around climate finance, in particular around things like nature, biodiversity, loss and damage, which are key priorities for the developing world. So that's going to really corral everybody globally, including us in the UK, to really turn up at that summit and show the same enthusiasm as we did at Glasgow.
We have a green crisis, but we have to frame this and remind ourselves that this is not just a climate crisis, this is a crisis of our natural system. The natural systems, the production systems that we rely on for at least half of our economic output, are being damaged not just by human activity, but by climate change. And in fact, whilst we have food inflation and a food crisis, partly due to the war in Ukraine, what you have to also realize that this is also due to the failure of several harvests around the world, due to the extremities of temperatures, floods, rain, places like India and North America. So climate change is compounding the degradation of our natural systems. Our natural systems are our best tool and solution to fight climate change. I think the phrase, if you need to be net zero, you have to be nature positive. In fact, you can only be net zero if you're nature positive.
David Craig of the Task Force on Nature-Related Climate Disclosures there. Tania, as we've just heard, nature positive was a big theme to emerge at the conference. You hosted a panel discussion on the subject. Can you explain what nature positive means and how will it shape the next phase of net zero?
Yeah, this is it's a subject that's been really close to my heart over the last few years, and it's been great to see its prominence increasing. Essentially, in a similar way to how we haven't been accounting for carbon in our policies and the way we create products and services, nature positive is also meaning sort of enhancing the resilience of our planet and, you know, our societies by reversing that nature loss, so being then nature positive, but also accounting for the impact that we are having on the natural world, our biodiversity and ecosystems. Because, you know, if you're taking it back to, you know, first principles, everything that we're using, and sorry to go really deep suddenly, is obviously it comes from the planet. It's a natural resource that we're using, everything. And what we've seen is this growing urgency as well to be seeing sort of nature and net zero together. They are actually one of the same thing as well. Nature can also help us achieve our net zero ambitions. So when we've been talking a lot about climate change at the moment, it's been a lot about mitigation. How do you stop the impacts of climate change? But as part of that, you also need to be thinking about the resilience actually as well. Therefore, we're still going to see those droughts. We're still going to see earthquakes, floods, really high temperatures as well. That goes without saying. So whilst we need to continue to strive towards, you know, our Paris commitments, we also need to be adapting and making our communities more resilient to these changes that are going to occur. And nature can be the solution to that up again.
I mean, there's many businesses out there that are just getting to grips with their own net zero targets and strategies, or maybe they're just beginning to think about them. So how do they incorporate nature and biodiversity into their plans?
Yeah, I mean, first it's just inquiring oneself as, you know, as a business. It's something that you'd be looking at anyway as part of your business strategy. There have been some sectors that have been looking at this for a very long time already, mainly those that do have an impact on the environment directly. So the likes of water companies, for instance, understanding their impact on water ecosystems. The same with housing and construction sectors as well. When they've been developing, you know, prints or sites, they're looking at what is the impact that they're going to have on communities, on the rural wildlife as well. So first sort of taking stock as, you know, how is nature been featuring in your strategies to date, but also where can you add sort of add impact or value when you are sort of disrupting some of those ecosystems. So I think, like we've been seeing with net zero, it's first to ask the question within your business, and then sort of secondly, how can you incorporate it naturally within your net zero strategy? And that's where a great campaign that's been created is Get Nature Positive, alongside the Council for Sustainable Business. And that's also really important for the sustainability of your products as well. Going back to my point around the resources are scarce to begin with. So we need to be looking at nature in the same way, in this sort of circular fashion. So what we need to make sure is that whilst people are developing their net zero strategies, they aren't just negating and just focusing purely on emissions. We need to stop that in our tracks now. Otherwise, we're just going to replicate the same problem that we've been manifesting this whole time, if we're just going to exclude nature from that.
If I could just jump in there, I think that's absolutely right. And I think there's an opportunity here, I think, from the way I see it, is that the carbon emissions, and climate change obviously captures people's attention in that, you know, everyone's got an emissions profile, and it's almost, you know, it's consistent what you're measuring from sector to sector. I think, but the difficulty with carbon emissions is that it's something intangible about it for the most part. You know, you can't really see them, but nature and the environment has that tangibility, which, you know, people instinctively get what you mean and understand what you're trying to achieve with it. And for a business who's trying to not just, you know, set a strategy, but mobilize your people towards, you know, towards that strategy, I think actually incorporating the nature and the environment into your sort of overall sustainability plan, including carbon, is a great way to get people energized and introduced to what you're trying to achieve, so that there's an opportunity in sort of integrating those two things as well.
Absolutely. I mean, it's great just to even be talking about nature in the context of a business conversation, frankly. I think that's a huge step forward. Now, moving on, finally, COP27 is approaching, as we touched upon. November will be on us before we know it. How are things shaping up for it? Will countries step up their commitments when they convene in Sharm el-Sheikh in Egypt?
It's still all to play for. As we've spoken about already, the impact of the war in Ukraine has really shifted the dial. I think for us as the UK, what we need to focus on is the delivery and implementation aspects in particular, as opposed to sort of constantly target setting. That's going to be a key element to see, you know, people coming forward with showing what some of those tangible delivery plans actually look like. What I think is really important is going to be that climate finance point in particular, because we didn't see that target being met last year, and that's going to be hugely important for this division that was created between the developed and the developing world. This is a really significant COP because it's the first to happen in the African continent, a continent that is hugely impacted by, you know, changes to climate. So we've really got to see that step up in commitments. But also on that point around adaptation, nature, resilience, loss, damage, finance in particular, that really has to come forward. And then finally, we need the business community to be rallying behind governments to say that this is still a priority. But it can be a real force of nature, I think, given its positioning in the calendar and given the ownership for Egypt as well. It has a lot of hopes pegged to it at this point in time. But also, finally, we need to see some more movement on some of those Glasgow impact promises that were made and some of the, you know, bilateral agreements that were made in the sidelines. That was one of the really unique aspects of the COP26. Previously, you wouldn't have had so many commitments being made in between, you know, sessions between big countries like US and China. There isn't that feel that this COP will be able to garner such commitments being made, but as part of the Glasgow Climate Pact, to show progress on things like methane is going to be important as well. So I think it's definitely all to play for, but also the stakes are quite high.
Thanks, Tania. Now, Tom, COP26 was a huge global event. Will enthusiasm for COPs continue? And what's the role of business in the future of them?
Yeah, I think COP26 was big. It was definitely my first COP26, well, any COP that I'd attended. I felt a little bit like, you know, one of those football fans who only turns up once their team starts winning. But it was an amazing thing to experience and to be a part of. And there definitely was that sense that businesses were invited. I think the enthusiasm for business is still there. And I hope that we actually go further in terms of, you know, inviting the private sector to come forward with solutions to the problems and, you know tangible things like actually mechanisms for securing private finance and green infrastructure, for example, or coalitions of businesses who are making commitments to buy green products like green steel, for example. I think, you know, there's more road to run in terms of what the private sector might be able to do in these types of events. I guess we should recognize though that geopolitics has changed a little bit, and the dynamics of these global events is likely to change with it. But, you know, last year, I think there is always tension between countries, and who would have thought that last year we'd had the US and China, the two largest emitters, coming together with a joint declaration of what they were going to achieve together in the 2020s in pursuit of this goal. So, you know, to an extent, I hope that, you know, some of those differences can be it can almost be shelved for a bit, and just, you know, focusing on this long-term challenge that we're all facing into. And then I hope business will be there too.
Thanks, Tom. Well, that's all we have for you today. Many thanks to Tom Thackeray and Tania Kumar for joining us. We will leave you now with a clip from Alok Sharma, MP, COP26 president at the CBI Achieving Net Zero conference.
What has business done well? So I think at COP26, as I said, I think it's the first time we saw this sort of big mass of the business community internationally coming together and making big commitments. And as I said, you know, we've got 7,000 international businesses signed up to the Race to Zero campaign. I think what needs to happen next, obviously we need more of these, more companies to sign up to commitments to net zero. But what we really need to see is those detailed transition plans coming together. You know, just as I say to countries, it's great that, you know, we've now got 90% of the global economy covered by a net zero target, but unless you're going to meet your short-term objectives in terms of cutting emissions, you know, the long-term becomes sort of, you know, really a little bit sort of meaningless. And so what we need is for all of you to set out detailed transition plans on how you're going to get sort of there near-term and work with your suppliers. And the final thing I'd just say is that, you know, one thing I have noticed, and last year, Tony, I went to almost 40 countries in about a nine-month period, and I can tell you it was quite something traveling during COVID, and I've continued to travel. But when I've gone, I've met not just businesses, but I've also not just governments, but also businesses and civil society. And there are countries I can point at, I won't mention them here, but there are countries I can point at where even over that sort of two, three-year period we've been doing this work, you've seen the business community pulling governments forward with commitments. And that is great. So if you are an international business, then please do that in all the jurisdictions that you are based.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. For more on achieving net zero, please visit our website at cbi.org.uk.